You're listening to CKMS 102.7 FM in Waterloo, Ontario, radiowaterloo.ca on the web. This program is a part of the Local Journalism Initiative grant program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. You can access the recordings of this show on radiowaterloo.ca/news or on the National Local Journalism Initiative website. I'm your host, Ivan Angelovski. December 17 is International Day to End Violence Against Sex Workers. If things were normal, on this day, Kitchener and Waterloo would be painted in red, with sex workers and their advocates coming together, carrying red umbrellas, a symbol for sex workers' rights. Those rights are in danger even in the best of times, and during pandemic, things went through the roof. We're talking with Amy Venner of ACWA, the AIDS Committee of Cambridge, Kitchener, Waterloo and area, who is also co-chair of SWAN, Sex Workers Action Network of Waterloo Region.
It's very difficult to work within a system that isn't designed to support people. It's designed to kind of push them to the margins. Sex work itself is actually criminalized. So what that means is that under Bill C-36 of the Canadian Criminal Code, a number of activities surrounding sex work are considered a crime. So for example, selling your own sexual services is legal in Canada, but purchasing is a crime. So somebody can sell sexual services, but a client is criminalized for buying. So then that makes negotiation really tricky. Likewise, sex workers would be considered committing a crime if they're working together in an apartment because it's seen as operating a brothel to the criminal code. And these laws really impede on the safety of sex workers throughout Canada. You know, convictions can lead to criminal records, incarceration, deportation, eviction of housing, loss of care for their children, and all these really impact future access to employment and housing. So sex workers have to operate in a covert, isolated conditions, which increase the risk of extortion and violence. And they often can't turn to police when crimes are committed for fear of future repercussions, surveillance, and like future possible convictions kind of thing. And especially for Indigenous sex workers, Black sex workers of color, trans sex workers, these harms and violence resulting from these laws are really compounded because they live in bodies that are already heavily under surveillance and disproportionately criminalized. So SWAN, and part of my work, is to advocate for this decriminalization of sex work, which means removal of these sex work-related sanctions in the criminal code for consenting adults, of course. So within this framework, sex work is recognized as a labor activity and falls within labor codes. So under decriminalization, sex workers no longer have to fear, you know, arrest, imprisonment, deportation, all of those because of their work. It's seen as their work. So these are kind of the things that really drew me in, is recognizing these laws that are in place aren't actually helping people at all, and instead it's making issues a lot worse for sex workers, and that extends to, of course, sex workers within Waterloo Region.
Tell me more about the history of SWAN and what are the experiences so far.
The network was formed in 2007. It's gone through a whole bunch of different iterations and focuses since then, but the main priority or the vision has always been that Waterloo Region will be a community where sex workers have a voice, be recognized as valuable members of society, and will have access to community resources that respectfully provide safety, support, and choices that foster well-being. The group consists of a number of different members. So one of them is, of course, folks with lived experience in sex work. I mean, we can't have a group that talks about sex work without having sex workers within the group. But we also have a number of agencies throughout Waterloo Region that are represented on SWAN. So that would include, of course, ACWA, the Sexual Assault Support Center, Shore Center, House of Friendship, the Working Center, the YW in Cambridge. We do have a few initiatives going on right now. So one of them that was launched, I believe, May of this year, was a bad date reporting service.
Tell me more about that. I'm guessing that there are different experiences, some of them not so...
Exactly, yeah. So this service is available to anonymously share information to protect the safety of sex workers in Waterloo Region. So really the purpose is to gather details about people who have threatened or harmed sex workers in Waterloo Region and make this information available to others to serve as a warning system. So it's not done through the police, it's actually done through SWAN so that they can anonymously report violence that they've experienced, not have to go through the whole policing system and risk being, of course, criminalized or under surveillance in the future.
Yeah, it's basically some kind of a parallel system of reporting.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and what did you hear so far?
So we have gotten a few reports since then. And of course, like I mentioned, it just launched in May. So that tells you that there is violence against sex workers happening in this community right now. And this violence is, of course, increased during COVID. Theft is a common issue. Threats are common as well. So somebody has had it like a client and then they continue to harass or threaten to out that person if they don't do whatever like this client has said. Extortion has happened. If you don't continue to see me for whatever reason, or you don't do this that I want you to do, I'm going to, you know, tell people, I'm going to post pictures, I'm going to do whatever I can to get my way kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a bad date.
Yeah.
What other services are in SWAN?
So we also offer, it's a sex workers welcome training. So this training is to educate the community on sex work while providing practical tools to be a safer ally to sex workers. So the content was actually developed by sex workers and really brings to the forefront the various intersecting challenges that sex workers may face while working, accessing services and staying safe. So we're working to adapt this online right now, but pre-COVID, what we were doing was going to different community agencies and just telling them talking with them about the information that sex workers here want them to know when sex workers are accessing their services. Because what we do hear sometimes is that a sex worker will enter an agency and then it's disclosed that, oh, I do sex work. And then immediately the response is, well, how do we get you out? When like that person might not be there for that at all. Maybe they're there for, you know, housing needs or whatever, like counseling services, something like that. So then when the attention immediately turns into how do we save you? Like that person's like, this isn't what I'm looking for here. So we just, you know, talk with agencies and have them, you know, kind of understand where sex workers are coming from and how to be a better ally when they're supporting folks. And we also have a care packages program right now. Once COVID-19 was declared a pandemic, we had to pause our in-person drop-in program. So instead, we initiated a care packages program, which distributes items that might make somebody who's having a hard time feel a little bit more valued, or anything that's practical for homeless folks to access. Hygiene products, for example, or, you know, makeup is something as simple as that. Having like a bit of pieces of material items that can kind of bring up your day a little bit, or things that you don't have to go buy, is what we're trying to give out into the community and to recognize, like, SWAN, we see you. Like, we see sex workers in this pandemic are struggling. So we want to offer, you know, what we can. And we've been fortunate to have partnered with Cafe Pyrus, which is a cafe in downtown Kitchener. And they had been collecting donations for these care packages over the last few months. So that partnership has been a huge benefit to the group, because then we were able to get items out much more quickly and we were able to you know, collect items from the community and then be able to communicate, like the community also is supporting sex workers. And of course we do advocacy. So we've done some letter writing for political advocacy reasons, particularly during surrounding COVID and the CERB benefit, which sex workers, unfortunately, many weren't able to access when it was available because you had to declare or show proof that you earned $5,000 or more in the last year, which some weren't able to show on record. You know, people might be paid with cash, but others who are able to prove it might not want to disclose because of the criminalization that goes with sex work, and would that put them under more surveillance? Unfortunately, that meant that, you know, other workers within Canada were able to access this amazing tool, whereas sex workers were kind of left on their own to scramble.
Can we talk about the numbers?
Well, maybe I should define sex work too, because I think people do get kind of confused with that. So sex work is actually an umbrella term. That's the consensual exchange of sexual intimacy for something of value. So sex work, we think of a whole range of activities that are involved. So, you know, there's, you know, stripping, escorting, performing in pornography, performing on webcam. So it's kind of all of these different activities that are involved in sex work. And with that, we also won't actually have an exact number of how many people are doing sex work in the region. And this is largely because social marginalization, criminalization, discrimination, and stigma force sex workers to keep their work secret, even from their closest friends and family. And of course, violence against sex workers is very real in this community. So for some, it would be very unsafe for them to be open about their work. But what we do know is that sex workers come from many different walks of life, and their reasons for engaging in sex work really vary significantly. So for example, many choose their work because it empowers them, it meets their employment needs, like flexible work hours, setting their own terms, earning more than minimum wage, being able to express themselves. And for others, it's just something to pay the bills. But I mean, that is every other job. Some people have large passions for the work that they do, whereas others are just doing it so that they can pay the bills. And that is exactly how sex workers kind of operate. It's important to know too that sex workers are of any age, gender, race, sexual orientation, ability, social economic background, and that many negotiate intersecting and layered systems of oppression, including colonialism, racism, transphobia, homophobia, classism, etc. So we don't really have an exact number or an exact, you know, image of a sex worker because it really varies.
Do you have any like estimates or just kind of guess?
We would assume that it is a lot. A few years ago, we did a research study that interviewed 52 sex workers. And of course, this is just people who we were able to get connected with, who were willing to speak about their experiences and that. So obviously we would assume a lot more. And like I said, many aren't open about their work. So they might not never engage with SWAN, and they may never tell other people that they work. So plus many people kind of move in and out of the work. So at one point in time, somebody may be considered a sex worker, and then maybe a few months later, they're not. So that kind of challenges how we can make a count. Plus, you know, surveillance wise, people don't really want to be counted in as doing sex work because there's so much criminalization and stigma around it. The words that are used or the images that paint sex workers is really a one-dimensional stereotype or solely as somebody who needs to be saved, when really, you know, sex workers are skillful and creative and intelligent, resourceful, they're funny and they're loving, like they're really part of our community and they deserve to live and work with safety and dignity. But instead, what they're often faced with is people who think that I need to get you out. Like, I need to save you from this work. You're not behaving the way that I think you need to behave. That pushes people to marginalized situations where they can't talk about what their actual health issues are.
Did you have that stigma when you entered the field? Pushback?
You know, a few years ago, way before I started even my master's in social work, probably because we are brought up to with so much messaging about how, you know, sex workers need to be saved and that they're, you know, all going through a really difficult situation. And if we could just get them out, you know, things would be great. But, you know, once I got more educated on it, actually talked with sex workers, which is something that many people, when they form these ideas about what sex workers need, they haven't actually talked with somebody. I think once I actually started talking with people and understanding their experiences and really listening, that significantly changes how people are viewed. And we watch, you know, media, like TV shows, portray many sex workers as kind of that same, you know, streetwalker kind of image. And maybe there are some in this community that, you know, meet that image, but they're way more than that. They're way more than just this person who's like, you see, it's, there's so much to them. Yeah,
but I'm guessing it's different from a trafficked person.
Absolutely, yeah. So trafficking and sex work are entirely different, which is something that we face a lot, you know, doing sex work advocacy, especially in the last year or so, where trafficking has gotten so much media attention. But we have to remember that trafficking is very different in that people don't have a say. So in sex work, it's consenting. They're choosing to do this work and it's a job. Whereas trafficking, is they are not under their own choices to engage with the work.
They're doing what their traffickers are telling them.
That's right, yeah. So they are extremely different, and it's something that we do, you know, face a lot of pushback about, is especially when it comes to that saving aspect, is people immediately think about trafficking a lot. We really have to get to the bottom of what is that person actually experiencing. And again, that comes down to listening to that person and hearing what they think of the work.
So what did COVID-19 brought to this complicated, you know, equation?
It's really placed sex workers in a difficult situation. For example, many are experiencing loss of income due to canceled appointments, decrease for services, you know, sickness, workplace closures. So for example, the orange zone actually means that strip clubs are closed, which means that people who are working in those clubs are left without funds they may rely on. And of course, like other precarious workers, sex workers generally can't access labor protections like sick days, salary, employment insurance, or other benefits. So there's really no safety net for sex workers when they're unable or not wanting to work. And of course, many then, because they don't have these income safety nets, they're having to choose between earning an income or risking their health. So this is really made additionally complicated through the layered, you know, social, political, economic marginalization experienced by sex workers in the community. So for example, physical distancing is really challenging for some, because the loss of income following these physical distancing measures can mean the difference between affording basic needs like rent, food, childcare, and those kind of things. So it kind of puts people at a really difficult situation of, do I continue working or do I, you know, and risk my health, or do I risk my rent? Do I risk being evicted? Or do I risk my child care, my child not being looked after because I can't afford child care? And likewise, moving to a virtual space isn't feasible for all sex workers due to, you know, things like privacy and safety concerns or inaccessibility of technology. Some might not have internet or devices. Some might not have the proper equipment to do, you know, good quality kind of videos and that. And like, there's so much online, so they're competing against many, many people. Plus, moving online requires an entirely different skill set, as well as obtaining different clientele, working with different service platforms, and navigating a whole other sector of the industry. So it's not as simple as, you know, just moving online, as many of us have been able to do.
So what do you do? I mean, if you cannot meet with your clients, if you cannot do it online, your income comes to zero.
That's right. Or it places others in a more risky situation, because the clients, they're not dumb either, meaning that they recognize appointments are being canceled. So your client base might be smaller, which also might mean negotiation power is decreased. You know, a client may, where they might usually pay a higher rate, might say, well, I'm going to pay you a lower rate and you can take it or leave it, kind of thing. And then the sex worker is left with, do I take that, you know, lower rate because I need food for tonight, or do I say no because it's not my rate? It's challenging that way, and it increases the chances of violence as well, because people aren't able to negotiate as well as they might have been able to pre-pandemic, or if they had the social financial safety net that other workers have been kind of afforded. I'd also say within SWAN itself, we're seeing a decrease in capacity of sex workers to engage in advocacy work.
What do you mean?
So many of those who were in sort of leadership roles in event planning or speaking engagements, even strategic development within the network before the pandemic, are struggling with the impacts of COVID-19 on their mental health and well-being. Which has been, they've had to step away from some of the work that they were engaged with before within the network. This interview is actually an example of that. It would have been more in alignment with our values if a sex worker were speaking about their experiences. But when asked over the last couple of weeks, many sex workers didn't feel they had the energy or capacity to speak today and to advocate for themselves. So that's why I'm kind of here with you today.
But why is that? I mean, what are they going through? Can you paint us a picture?
Yeah. So, I mean, the loss of income is significantly large. And I think mental health has been impacted by most of us within this time having to isolate. So I think that's had a stronger impact on folks who don't have access to the income like others might have had, or to secure housing, having fear of losing their clients. So if maybe a few clients have canceled lately, are they ever going to come back? Those kind of things have a significant impact. Plus, sex workers often have acted as like a therapist for some of their clients, meaning that some people, when they're seeing sex workers, are also opening up about emotional things that are going on in their own lives and treating the sex worker like a personal kind of therapist. And the sex worker, of course, doesn't have the training necessarily or the support in the way that other professional counselors might have access to. So this takes a toll on people. And then you add the fact that they're having to advocate for themselves so often with stigma. And I mean, even with, we're seeing online some, you know, I've seen comments and jokes about strip clubs, why are they a priority kind of thing? Well, some people rely on those clubs to earn the income that they need to survive. So when you're faced with all this stigma and all this additional challenges through the pandemic, it just really drains on people in a way that, you know, really impacts the work that can be done or like the person's well-being.
So
You are talking with different levels of government about how to help sex workers. Do they hear you at all?
To a point. We advocated for sex workers to be more included in the CERB benefit early on in the pandemic. We did have a few phone calls with different municipal levels of government. You know, unfortunately, not a lot was able to be changed. Government kind of moves a bit slower than we would like, but we feel like it's important to really just still speak to these things.
Yeah, but do you see any, you know, understanding of what it would mean to decriminalize sex work in total?
I would hope so. So there's been advocacy groups throughout all of Canada since Bill C-36 came to be, advocating for the decriminalization. So the work is ongoing. I think it needs to be heard a lot more. Unfortunately, it hasn't become decriminalized despite all of the calls, all of the attention that it's gotten.
But what's the reason? I mean, is it the colonialism you were speaking about, 17th, 18th century mindset?
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to, you know, colonialism, the racism, all of the systemic issues, but also the moralistic standpoint that some people come and view sex work as, again, people needing to be saved or selling their bodies kind of thing. People still hold those older patronizing viewpoints. And unfortunately, that's within levels of government as well, that people need protecting through the law and they can't make their own decisions kind of thing. But unfortunately, those protections often just make things a lot worse.
This is CKMS Newsroom at 102.7 FM, and you've been listening to interview with Amy Vanner of AQUA, the AIDS Committee of Cambridge, Kitchener, Waterloo and area, who is also co-chair of SWAN, Sex Workers Action Network of Waterloo Region. December 17 is an international day to end violence against sex workers that's now, with the pandemic, more important than ever. Check out the archived versions of this program and other episodes on radiowaterloo.ca/news. You can follow us on Twitter at Radio Waterloo, and you can email news@radiowaterloo.ca to get in touch with comments or ideas about stories to cover. The music was Black Room by Moby. Thanks to MobyGratis.com. My name is Ivan Angelovsky, and I was your host for this program.